The Making of Marshall Blackstone, by Riano, D. McFarland. Chapter 1. Oliver Blackstone was never one to just stand by in the presence of injustice. It wasn't that he ever went looking for trouble, but somehow it always managed to find him. In school, he was one of the tallest students in the classroom, attracting the attention of both flirtatious girls and mischievous boys. In San Antonio, Texas, there was an abundance of both, and on more than one occasion, that combination had served to create a volatile environment. The majority of such dust-ups ended quickly when Oliver's substantial reach advantage was brought to bear. Despite being the victor, Oliver had no interest in the spoils, namely, a girl who found it entertaining to goad her beau into an unnecessary fight. Not that any of those things mattered to Oliver. Since the age of 10, he had worked side by side with his uncle, Jedediah Martell, the owner of a highly successful gunsmith store in San Antonio. If it fired a bullet, Oliver was fascinated by it, and would follow his uncle around the shop, watching and absorbing everything Jedediah did there. From muskets and bayonets used during the War of Independence to the myriad of rifles and handguns that found their way to Texas along with the European immigrants who owned them, by Oliver's 15th birthday, there weren't many weapons remaining that were unfamiliar to him. Jedediah Martell was known in the region for his ability to diagnose the problems with and repair any kind of gun, be it a Colt single-action army revolver or a European dual-barrel grapeshot Lamat. If it could be aimed and fired, then Jed Martell could make sure it did so any time the trigger was squeezed. Oliver shared his uncle's passion for guns, and over the years, while testing the sight alignment and accuracy of each weapon at the range behind the store, his shooting skills became somewhat of a local attraction. Rarely, if ever, did he miss, and when he did, it was a clear indication that something was wrong with the gun. Although Oliver never boasted about his marksmanship skills, Jedediah had no such inhibitions. In fact, that was one of his biggest selling points, because once the repairs to a customer's weapon were finished, Oliver was the ultimate proof of the gun's accuracy. The only limitation in Jedediah's store was that Oliver was never allowed to compete against another shooter. He felt such competitions would eventually lead to unsolicited challenges of another variety, and in the interest of reducing that risk, Jedediah kept Oliver's exhibitions on a strictly for entertainment basis. Nevertheless, due to the amount of repetition involved when it came to shooting, Oliver's abilities were almost eerie. When using his favorite pistol, the Colt Walker Model 1847, the weapon seemed to be an extension of his body. It was as if the bullet simply followed an invisible trajectory plotted by his eyes, and he could mentally see the point of impact on a target while he was squeezing the trigger. Whether the object was moving or stationary, his steady hand and hawk-like vision were always true in plotting the path of a bullet from the muzzle to its final destination. Although that skill was most noticeable when firing his Army Colt, it was certainly not unique to it. In fact, Oliver was incredibly accurate with almost any firearm. Despite his unprecedented skill with handguns, while away from the store where he lived with his Aunt Karen and Uncle Jedediah, he never carried one. He personally believed that carrying a holstered sidearm on his hip was far too often misconstrued as an unspoken challenge to potential troublemakers, looking for a reason to call someone out. Of course, he'd heard of high noon showdowns just like everyone else had, but despite the supposed excitement surrounding them, very few people had actually ever seen one. As a young man standing over 6 feet tall, he wasn't an obvious target for bullies, and due to his congenial nature, nearly everyone he encountered genuinely liked him. Following the Battle of the Alamo, Anglo-Americans slowly began repopulating the areas in and around San Antonio, Texas, and the numbers of immigrants from the eastern territorial United States grew dramatically. That spike in the population inevitably brought with it an ever-increasing number of altercations, most of which were quickly settled in fist fights that, although painful, were far from deadly for either participant. One evening, after closing up shop, Oliver was sweeping the walkway outside the store when he noticed a young woman in distress in front of the general store across the street. The young man following her seemed perturbed by her lack of a response to his obnoxiously lewd remarks, and continued to badger her even after she left the building. At first, Oliver watched, and when the man's rant began to fizzle out, he assumed that would be the end of it. The fellow actually turned to walk back into the store, then thought better of it, and began stomping furiously along the wooden sidewalk towards the woman again. When the angry man grabbed her arm, Oliver dropped his broom and ran across the street towards them. He was only a few steps away from them when he heard the sound of her blouse sleeve ripping, and without hesitation, Oliver pulled the man away from her, spinning him to face the fist already on a direct collision course with his left jawbone. He was slightly older than Oliver, but he crumbled to the sidewalk like a sack of flour when Oliver's punch connected. For a moment, he just sat there, leaning against the wall as Oliver stood over him, and the young woman disappeared around the corner to her family's bakery. Once she was no longer in danger, Oliver walked back across the street to his uncle's store and continued sweeping the walkway. He was close to finishing up when the young man appeared again, this time walking with an older gentleman directly towards him. "That's him, Pa. He's the one who sucker punched me," shouted the angry young man. "Is it true?" asked the older man. "Did you sucker punch my boy, Cole?" "I wouldn't go so far as to say I sucker punched him," Oliver said. "I just didn't believe he deserved more time to finish ripping the blouse from a young woman's back, so I intervened in a timely manner." "He's lying, Pa. I never even laid a hand on her," Cole ranted. "And I was carried across the street on an angel's wings and gently bumped into your son by accident," said Oliver. "Do you think this is some kind of joke, son?" asked Cole's father. "No, sir," said Oliver. "I just figured that if we're making up our own versions of the truth, I might as well make mine a colorful one." "I ought to," started Cole, before being cut off by his father. "Cole Andrew Lofton, shut up, boy," he snarled, before turning his attention back to Oliver. "Are you calling my son a liar?" he asked. "Yes, sir," Oliver replied. "Then where is this mystery woman who my son allegedly attacked?" "The only person I see here is you," stated the man. "I don't rightfully know," said Oliver. "She hurried on home after your son. Is it Cole? Anyway, after he let go of her blouse, she left while he was still resting his eyes on the sidewalk," Oliver added. Cole was fuming, and his father's stare could have brought about an early winter were it not for the merciless Texas sun. "How about a fair fight?" asked Cole's father. "The two of you can settle this right here and right now." "I'm not a woman, Mr. Lofton, so I'm not sure that Cole here would consider that to be a fair fight," said Oliver, blithely. "I don't take kindly to any man who puts his hands on a woman, so he could just apologize, and I will pass his apology on to the girl the next time I see her, and that will be the end of it," Oliver added. Mr. Lofton just stood there, staring Oliver in the eyes. Neither of them flinched, and the vein at Cole's temple seemed ready to burst when the older man finally spoke, asking, "What's your name, young man?"
"Oliver Blackstone, sir," Oliver answered. Nodding, Mr. Lofton said, "Apologize, Cole."
"What?"
exclaimed Cole, stammering. "But Pa, he—"
"Shut up and apologize, boy," exclaimed Mr. Lofton.
"And be glad that you won't have to suffer the embarrassment of getting your ass kicked all over again."
"But it was," murmured Cole, before being cut off again.
"Boy, if the next words out of your mouth aren't an apology, I will stomp your ass myself."
"Now apologize," Mr. Lofton yelled.
After a brief delay, Cole said, "I'm sorry."
"Sorry for what?"
asked Mr. Lofton.
"I'm sorry for disrespecting the young lady," he finally managed to confess.
"Thank you," said Oliver. "I will pass that on to her when I see her again."
"How old are you, Oliver Blackstone?" asked Mr. Lofton.
"I just turned 18, sir," Oliver replied. Mr. Lofton obviously contemplated his next words very carefully before saying, "Mr. Blackstone, I normally prefer to wait until a man has at least 20 years under his belt, but obviously that is an improper rule of measurement, considering my son is 20 years old and still doesn't get it." Now Oliver was intrigued, and asked,
"Doesn't get what, sir?"
"That it takes more than a hot temper and an overgrown ego to become a U.S. deputy marshal," said Mr. Lofton, while reaching into his inner coat pocket and withdrawing a calling card. "I'm Marshal Daniel Lofton, and now that the great territory of Texas has become a state, we have a shortage of marshals and deputy marshals, and I'd like to extend to you my personal invitation to join us."
"What would I have to do?" queried Oliver, not even sure of why he'd asked. United States Marshals enforce the laws of the United States across the entire country, and now that we've added a state the size of Texas, we are in need of deputies to patrol this rather large piece of new real estate, and something tells me you'd be a good fit," Marshall Lofton explained.
"I would need to speak with my aunt and uncle about it first," said Oliver. Handing Oliver the card, the marshal said, "I'll be here in San Antonio for the next 2 days, then I'm heading west to bring in a fugitive. If you've made your decision by then, meet me here on Friday morning and I'll get you sworn in and outfitted. I'll fill you in on everything else on our way to Del Rio."
After handing Oliver the card, Marshall Lofton turned to walk across the street. 10 steps away, he stopped and looked back to ask, "Can you shoot?" Without a word, Oliver nodded and pointed above his head to the sign over the door of the store that read J&K Gunsmiths of San Antonio. Seemingly satisfied, Marshall Lofton continued to the hitching post in front of the general store, where he and Cole mounted their horses and trotted off down the street and out of sight. It definitely wasn't the first time he'd heard of the U.S. Marshals Service recruiting deputies. Since Texas joined the Union in December of 1845, there has been an ongoing recruitment campaign. As the criminal elements of society followed the migratory expansion of the country's population westward, those former outlaws hoping to begin anew, west of the Mississippi River, soon proved themselves incapable of walking the line of law and order. Almost without exception, they had either robbed or killed another innocent victim long before reaching the Western Territories, and the new leaf they'd planned on turning over was already stained in blood. Texas was an enormous territory in which fugitives from justice believed they could simply disappear. For some, that may have been true, but when you're living on borrowed time and stolen money, either one or both of them will eventually run out, and trusty old habits will once again emerge. Oliver was well aware of the dangers associated with being a deputy marshal. Marshals weren't dispatched to handle domestic disturbances of the peace, or petty theft. They were sent to hunt down the worst of the worst criminals and bring them in to face justice for the crimes they committed. Those outlaws were often desperate men who knew that when they were caught, there would be gallows and a noose awaiting them. Surprisingly, Oliver wasn't particularly bothered by that. Just as with the young woman who'd been attacked by the marshal's son, Cole, Oliver felt a sense of contempt toward those who harmed the innocent. Sure, the woman's blouse could be mended with a simple needle and thread, but the emotional damage of such an encounter is not as easy to repair. Such egregious acts require justice, and for Oliver, that justice couldn't come soon enough. By the time he'd finished cleaning up and locked the shop door, Oliver already knew that on Friday morning, he would become a deputy marshal.